And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, bringing you choices and knowledge of those choices. And we hope that they will help to fulfill the dreams that you are wanting to fulfill in your life. And a lot of people have a lot of interesting experiences as they go through life making choices. Sometimes we aren't as conscious as we'd like to be about the choices we're making, but that can change too. We can become very conscious, very aware that this is what I want to do, this is the direction that I want to go, and these are the things that I want in my life, the people I want in my life, the events, the experiences. I'm wondering if our guest will be able to tell us that a near-death experience is something that we want in our lives. PMH Atwater is my guest, and it's a pleasure to have you here on the program. Again, this is a return visit for you. Actually, I think this is your third visit to our program, and it's great to have you here.
Well, it's good to be here.
It's a beautiful spring day here in Central California. How about where you are?
Well, it's drippy and it's cold. But that's good.
My kind of weather.
It's very dry here.
Well, now I'm curious. In what I just stated about making choices and so forth, you know anybody that wanted a near-death experience?
Well, I hear from a number of people who go into surgery and come out of it very disappointed that they didn't have one.
Okay.
But most people... really are not aware, or, you know, it's very unpredictable, it just happened, there's no way of knowing. I don't know very many people at all who ever wished for something like this. I do know a number of people who are part of audiences that listen to near-death experiencers, ooh and awe about their experience and what they're like now, and wish for something like this to happen to them. And I say to everybody, don't. Absolutely don't. People don't seem to realize that near-death experiences usually come from violence or trauma. You have a body to rebuild afterward. You know, it's not just magic. And the after effects, although they sound positive, can be really rough and tough to handle. It takes a minimum of at least 7 years to integrate these experiences. They're not easily handled. You know, you think unconditional love, whoa, this is great. But it's not necessarily that great. If you have a family that never had such an experience, aren't interested in such an experience, don't understand why you're so different, mm-hmm. and factually feel that you're cold and detached and really not part of the family anymore.
And we're going to talk more about this as we continue on the program. Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, with my guest PMH Atwater. And she is a near-death experiencer, as well as a researcher and a studier of this. I'm not even sure, PMH, if I want to refer to it as this as a phenomenon. You wouldn't put it under that category, would you?
Yes, I would.
Oh, you would? Okay.
Yes, I would. And the reason why I would do that is it's because you cannot talk about the near-death experience without also talking about the after effects, which are both physiological and psychological.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the experience and the after effects. So that's why I would call it a phenomenon.
Okay.
In the sense of including both halves of the coin.
Right.
And, you know, I would really recommend that people get my book, Coming Back to Life,
mm-hmm.
just reissued. It's the very first book I ever wrote, and I think the most innocent, because I talked more about myself in that book than in any other book I have written.
Okay.
And people get a sense of certainly the kinds of things that I had to face, but also what other people have to face. And they, you know, they really see it in a very real, upfront way.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk more about that as we continue here on the program. Again, my guest, PMH Atwater, we're going to be talking about coming back to life, examining the after effects of near-death experiences. And if you have had one, we'd love to hear from you. You can give us a call. If you're in the Central Coast area, in the 805 area, 805 805-564-1290. That's 805-564-1290. If you're listening live on the internet, we stream live on the internet every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. And you can go to richarddugan.com. That's RichardDugan.com. Double D in there. And you can click on the giant Listen Live link up there in the upper right-hand corner. You can't miss it, folks. It's sitting right out in open place there. Big earth in the middle. Stay with us. This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, PMH Atwater is my guest, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Candy Hoff, healing practitioner and angel intuitive counselor. Through Angel Healing House, I can help you release emotional issues and physical ailments and finally find your inner strength to regain health, clarity, and balance in your life. Find your joy again by booking your transformational session in downtown Santa Barbara by phoning 831-277-3716 or visit my website, angelhealinghouse.com.
If you're looking for a full-service contractor to build your masterpiece from the ground up,
you should know that Sampanis Construction is Santa Barbara's premier construction company.
If you're looking for a full-service contractor to transform your home,
you should know that Sampanis Construction is Santa Barbara's premier construction company.
If you're looking for a full-service contractor to spruce up your kitchen or bath,
you should know that Sampanis Construction is Santa Barbara's premier construction company. From classic Mediterranean to ultra-contemporary to residential remodels, commercial storefronts, or kitchen remodeling. Now you know that Sampanis Construction is Santa Barbara's premier construction company. For more information on how Sampanis Construction will turn your dream into a reality, call 805-682-2772. That's 805-682-2772. Or visit sampanisinc.com today.
The telephone is 133 years old this month. In March 1876, Alexander Graham Bell made the first phone call in his lab in Cambridge, Massachusetts. The public then was slow to see the usefulness of the new invention. Obviously, much has changed. We now make more than a billion local calls each day. That's nearly four calls for every American. And 8 out of 10 of us now carry cell phones to connect from just about anywhere. Profile America is a public service of the U.S. Census Bureau.
Keeping all that fear inside. I understand how trouble haunts you.
It haunts me too.
Yes, and I do know how you feel. Oh, come on, walk with me, talk with me.
Tell Me Your Stories, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. I'm joined by PMH Atwater on the phones, and you are calling from where today?
I'm in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Oh, all the way on the other side of the country. Wow.
Yes.
Fantastic. Isn't technology amazing? And then, of course, we're also joined by my wife, Amrita. She's here in studio with us and sharing her wonderful energy as we continue talking about near-death experiences and the after effects. As we jump in here, if you have had an experience, a near-death experience, we'd love to hear from you, share your story here on the program with PMH Atwater and us here. And then, of course, if you're listening live, you can give us a call, 805-564-1290. If you're listening live on the internet, 866-564-1290. And then this program will be available after the broadcast. It'll be up on the website, richarddugan.com, and it'll be in the radio show's page right next to PMH Atwater's link to her website and all the great information that she has. As we jump in here, let's define some terms, or at least do some compare and contrast the difference between a near-death experience and an out-of-body experience. They certainly sound an awful lot alike.
Well, an out-of-body experience is just that. It's the perception of seeing and feeling and being aware and recognizing yourself as being far from your body or up on the ceiling or in another room or somehow, some way you have left your body. Now, we know historically that out-of-body experiences happen in all kinds of different ways to all kinds of different people. Children often have them as part of their waking life as well as their dreaming life. People can have them if they're taking a yoga class. They can suddenly find themselves out of body. Sometimes even people who are taking drugs can find themselves out of body. There's all kinds of ways that suddenly we can perceive ourselves from a spot away from our body looking back, or in fact have complete mobility and go just about anywhere. This is very, very common in war zones. People who are fighting in conflict often leave their bodies. People who are abused can leave their bodies. So I consider out-of-body experiences to be part of the normal kinds of things that can happen to the average human being. Now, if we're talking about the near-death experience, let's open that up to include the phenomenon, so we're broadening our view here. So if we open that up to look at the near-death, the experience itself, let's recognize that what is called a near-death experience is a scenario of components or elements that make up the incident. And certainly out-of-body experiences can be and often are one of those components. In fact, I would say in my research base, and that's nearly 4,000 adults and children, I would say that the out-of-body component is really the most popular in the sense that it happens the most often, adults and children. I would put the light, seeing this very unusual light, next or close to that figure. So when we're looking at the out-of-body component to a near-death experience, we're looking at something that is far more intense than a regular near-death experience. That's what all of our experiencers tell us. It's no dream. It's no vision. It's not just a projection of some kind. It's not your typical out-of-body experience, but one that is extremely accurate, lots of details, third-party testimonials about these details, and it's just incredibly intense and vivid and stunning in its in how people experience it.
And when was your first near-death experience? How did that come about?
Well, I had 3 in 3 months.
Okay.
I look back and I call it the heavenly sledgehammer effect.
Mm.
They all occurred in 1977. The first was January the 2nd. The second was January 2. The first was January 2. The second one was January 4. The third one was March 29. So within a span of 3 months, I had 3 of them.
Now, you mentioned that usually a near-death experience occurs due to some level, some kind of, shall we say, violence or trauma to the body.
Right.
And so all 3 of those experiences for you traumatic physical experiences to the body?
Right. For me, they certainly were.
Okay.
The first one was a miscarriage and extreme hemorrhaging. The second one, 2 days later, was a major thrombosis in my right thigh vein, which dislodged, followed by the worst case of phlebitis the specialist had ever heard of, let alone seen. And the one on March 29, we don't know for sure what killed me, whether it was a heart attack or exactly what it was. I just, no longer had any vital signs. And as near as anybody could tell, I was dead. So we're not really sure. Then that fall, I'm speaking now September, October, first part of November, still in 1977, I had 3 major relapses, one of which was adrenal failure, complete adrenal failure. I was working at the time with a blood pressure reading of 60 over 60, which tells you I was doing very good.
Mm-hmm.
And I was one of those people, more radical in that sense, that had to rebuild my body afterward. I had to relearn how to crawl, how to stand, how to walk, how to climb stairs, how to tell the difference between left and right, how to see properly, hear properly, and rebuild all of my belief systems. That means I got to remodel an old house, which we can call a body, and I had to relearn everything from scratch. I've been a prize-winning cook, put myself back in beginning cooking with the kids, been a homemaker, you know, raised three kids, put myself back in beginning homemaking. I took everything all over again because, for me, I had to re-identify everything. I mean, everything Richard lost its meaning, like a bar of soap or a sheet or newspaper or chair or food. I didn't know what they were.
Did this happen all three times, or did this just only happen after the third event?
I had a lot of this after the second one, but after the three were over, I was really decimated in the sense that, well, I really think I was still on the other side, really.
I was going to say,
I really don't think I was fully back.
The way you describe it, it's almost using current technological jargon. It sounds like your hard drive was completely reformatted, and which means all the data is lost, and you have to reinstall the operating system and all your programs, put your data back on there so you can start over again.
That's a pretty good analogy. I did not lose habits. What I lost was the conceptual basis and meaning that undergirded the habit.
Okay.
Let me give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that to open up a can of food, I had to use a can opener, open up the can, and then I would put the can down and get out a saucepan, bring the saucepan, put it on top of the counter, empty the can of food into the saucepan, put the can down, put the pan on a burner, turn the stove burner on. When it was warm enough, I could turn the burner off, take the pan off the burner, and empty the contents into a dish, and then put the pan down.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would look at that dish, and I would wonder, what's that for?
Oh, my gosh.
What did I do all that for?
Huh.
It had absolutely no meaning for me.
Well, I could have eliminated several steps in my younger days if it was a can of clam chowder soup or a cream of mushroom soup.
You just ate it straight out
of
the can.
Thank you very much.
You sound like my husband. He actually did that with a can of chili. About how it fit.
Oh, my. Well, now, this may sound a little strange, but why is this experience, why is this phenomenon important for those of us who haven't experienced it to hear about it, to understand it, and to understand that this is a part of the lives of other people? Where's the importance for the I'm not even sure what the right word is, the novice, if you will?
Well, it's important, of course, for medical people and scientific people, because this kind of phenomenon usually happens in accident scenes, emergency scenes, in hospitals. So they've got data, they've got readouts, they've got a way to test it, they've got a way to really look at the experience, because it's a continuous experience. It's not just a little flashy thing, although some are, but it's continuous consciousness that occurs when the body is not functioning at all and there's a flat, the brain is flatlined. I mean, everything is flat or gone or just about, and yet the person has full recall. They're completely conscious. They can still see. They can still hear. They can still move. They can still smell. And you know, they have all of these abilities. Yet there's no body functioning to support that. So, of course, for medical and scientific and people, this is just an incredible thing that they can now research. For many people, especially if they're in hospice or they're dealing with loved ones who are dying or who are ill, these kinds of stories, this kind of research is incredibly helpful. For the dying, for those who have already died, their families looking at this, you know, trying to understand why. This is extremely helpful for people who seemed, however, lost in their own lives, mm-hmm. Weren't satisfied in their lives, or, you know, were in one place in their lives and kind of felt a change was coming but didn't know what kind of change, and they suddenly get flipped over to something else. It's a real challenge, and for other people looking at this saying, my goodness, but look how they changed. For the average novice, I would say that looking at these experiences and the research about them, the biggest challenge, I think, of all is the spiritual one. Because here are people, let's say 99.9% come back head over heels in love with God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely convinced of that, of the presence of that deity, of that extremely powerful, how do we even have words to describe how powerful that higher intelligence, that higher wisdom, that higher being is? You know, we call it God, we can call it Source, we can call it the One, we can call it Allah, we can call it whatever we want to call it, but the fact is, it's there, it's real, it does exist. And the realization that we have a soul, that there is spirit, there is such a thing as Holy Spirit, that there really is spirituality, and that if we live in accordance with that, or what we can know of that, then our lives do take on a very different path, for most of us much better. Even if we suffer, even if there's more sacrifice, eventually that leads to something better. So just encountering the spiritual, my goodness, that changes people's lives right there.
You're listening to PMH Atwater. She is the author of her first book, which, as she said, is being reprinted, Coming Back to Life. And we're talking about examining the after effects. We're going to get into that in just a moment. You are listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, bringing you choices, knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We're here trying to understand this particular experience because it's something that is happening to people. And, of course, as you said just a few moments ago, that it's happening especially in conflict areas where, you know, people are warring against one another and so forth. There is certainly within the medical community, because you said that for the medical community this is like a gold mine, so to speak, of information, and they want to understand this better. Yet the medical community, at least as far as I understand it, their credo is that, you know, they're going to do everything to save life at all cost. And yet there's the other side of the coin that says, well, maybe it's time for you to go. And yet most of the people, and maybe all of them, and you can attest to this better than I, usually get the message on the other side that, no, it's not your time. You have to go back. And, of course, the physicians on the other side are working like crazy to bring the physical body back to life. And I wonder if, you know, I've heard this said to the medical community, you need to know when it's time to say when. And let the person go, but how do you know? You know, that's
well,
interesting.
You don't really know. All you can do is respond to whatever feelings and thoughts and knowledge that you have. You know, a lot of EMT crews and emergency crews get all caught up in this because of that sense of guilt, I suppose. In feeling like, well, maybe I shouldn't have brought that person back. You know, maybe I should have left them where they were. Because some people, when they come back, are very, very angry. And in fact, anger is the very first and usually the first and the most predominant emotion that a near-death experiencer has. And there's two different kinds of anger. One, they didn't want to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And they're resentful or angry at the medical crews for bringing them back. And the other type of anger is a very different kind of anger that, these people are often resentful that this ever happened to them, that they ever had an experience like this, because they were happy with their lives. They didn't want anything like this to happen to them. They are overly challenged by it, and they don't like it.
But most near-death experiencers are not necessarily, well, they're not suicidal. In other words, they didn't want to.
Very few are. Yeah. Very, very few are.
But once they were put in that position, if you will, in that experience, the near-death experience, not wanting to come back, one of the after effects that you're describing is that anger.
Well, that certainly is a major emotion that they feel.
Mm-hmm.
Is that anger, like, you know, why am I back? I didn't want to come back.
Yeah.
I would have preferred to stay over there. But usually that doesn't last all that long, because they come to recognize or realize that they're back for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them are told, like you said, they have a job to do. There's a mission for them to perform. There's something else. So they're brought back to accomplish that. It doesn't seem to matter whether you choose to stay over there, or you choose to come back, or you prefer to stay over there. If it isn't your time, if there's more for you to do, you're coming back.
Well, let me ask you to talk, if you would, for just a moment or two about this experience that seems to dovetail into this, and that is the issue of walk-ins. Can you talk a little bit about that in relation to near-death experiences? Is there a correlation at all?
I challenge the idea and the concept of walk-ins. I've met very, very few people. In fact, I've only met three people so far in my life that I feel are real walk-in. The idea of walk-ins came from Ruth Montgomery and a book of hers.
Yes.
Further back in time, in our esoteric traditions, we have stories about this kind of thing. We have knowledge about this kind of thing. They used to be called exchanges, where souls would exchange bodies for whatever reason. They were not called walk-ins. They were called exchanges. And those were very real and very valid, and there's a history of those. The idea that's now more modern, that one soul will leave a body, another soul will come in, and there's always permission, and the soul that's coming in will agree to take on that other person's karma or that other person's job or duties, and they're free to go elsewhere. And the new one coming in, you know, takes over. The idea of it being a shortcut, that they don't have to be born and go through all those years of learning, that they can come in as a more mature soul and just sort of take off where things were left off.
Mm-hmm.
And it is said that most of these come in through that pathway or portal of the near-death experience. I really do challenge that, because near-death experiencers go through years and years of really having to deal with the after effects. They're both physiological and psychological. Having a near-death experience is no kind of shortcut at all.
Mm-hmm.
For anything. It just takes a long time to deal with this, considering how many millions of people are near-death experiencers. And the latest percentages, we know now through research that about 4 to 5% of the population of any given country has had a near-death experience. And looking at the population of the world, that would make it somewhere in the range of 330 million experiencers.
Wow.
So that's a lot of people. No way could that be the major portal or the major path for people to come in. what I find when I look at the supposed characteristics of walk-ins afterward and how they behave and how they think and, you know, what they have to deal with, and then compare that to near-death experiencers and what they go through, when you really study that, what we see with the near-death experience is that it seems to enlarge or enhance or expand whatever abilities or traits were already present. It seems to make you more of what you were before. So when you look at it that way and realize the real spiritual component here of becoming more than you were before, of expanding and enhancements, you realize that this is the normal, typical response to near-death experiences. In no way is this a kind of credo or trait of someone who calls themselves a walk-in, but rather it's part of the natural response to near-death experiences and other related experiences like them.
It's an interesting series of things that you've described here. And as we're talking about coming back to life, the book title, and of course the after effects, you've talked about how it takes around 7 years, roughly 7 years, for the near-death experiencer to, shall we say, get back to normal. One of the first.
Well, they don't really get back to normal.
Right, I didn't think so.
But, you know, they begin to integrate the experience.
Okay.
It really takes about 14 to 20 years before you really got it.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a long time.
It's one of the reasons why you advise people who are curious not to want it, because there's a lot of sounds to me like a lot of retraining of sorts that
right.
has to go on. Now, you mentioned
it's nothing to wish for.
Right. Now, you had mentioned that when you first return, the one key emotion that split into two halves, as you described it, that first emotion is anger. What are some of the other after effects as you begin to reacclimate and start to process what you experienced in light of the life that you're living now that you're back to life?
There's so many. You no longer personalize emotions and feelings, and especially the idea of love and belonging to anyone. It's like every woman you see is your mother, your aunt, your daughter, and your sister. Every man you see is your father, your husband, your son, your uncle. It's not that you don't recognize them. You know who's who, but you have the same response or a very similar response to all of them. And that can be very difficult if the experiencer is a parent and they have children. What we're finding now is that the children of adult experiencers really go through a period of feeling kind of a little lost and kind of grieve a little bit of their own for the parents' affections. Not that the parents aren't affectionate, they are, but it's different. It's just different. Let me give you a quick example from my oldest daughter. Her name is Natalie. I come originally from Idaho, so we're good Idahoans. Westerners, as you know, tend to be very independent, very outspoken, and oftentimes very, very blunt. And Natalie set me down one day in the kitchen, and she said, Well, I sure like to talk to you more now than I did before. You're pleasant to have around, but you're not mother, and I want mom back. Right? You know, we both looked for her. I never did find the woman. I don't know what happened to her, but she's gone. So it said that, you know, all children have the need to feel privy, the need to feel like they're special, that they belong to you. Well, if you no longer have a sense of belonging, or if you're more detached in the way you look at things, You can be seen as flirtatious. You can be seen as cold. You can be seen as unfeeling. You can be seen as ridiculous or maybe on a drug high, when all it is that incredible, what we like to bandy about, that wonderful word called unconditional love. And we really don't realize what we're saying when we say things like unconditional love, because that means there's no longer anything that's private. There's no more secrets. You know, it's like we're all one with the one. And, you know, that's really great if you're ready for it. But if you get it all at once, it can sometimes be a little, you know, a little bit difficult to handle. You no longer recognize and comprehend boundaries, rules, and limits. Things like a clock or engagements or appearance schedules, it kind of loses its meaning to you. If you weren't, let's face it, if you weren't psychic before, you become very psychic after. If you were psychic before, you become incredibly psychic after. You become much more creative, much more inventive than you ever were before. You have enhanced sensitivities and abilities. Anything latent comes forward and blooms, and there it is. You know, I've got this case of a shoe salesman. He was a detailer of shoes. That is to say, he wholesaled shoes and went to the various shoe stores and wholesaled these shoes. So he's what they call a detailer, a shoe detailer. He had a near-death experience as an adult. Afterward, he was suddenly singing grand opera. Loved opera, and was singing it so much that he was able then to try out at some of these special contests that they have for operatic singers.
Mm-hmm.
Won every one of them, and became fairly well known in the operatic scene. Became a teacher. He never knew anything about music or grand opera before. And you hear about these kinds of things every once in a while, that these latent abilities that people never knew they had suddenly pop up, and especially the ability to heal. This is certainly one of the more common. Other after effects, a change or shifted view of physical reality. It's like they see through events and situations and people. Let me just kind of share with you that this particular teenager, she was, you could almost call her a tween. She wasn't quite a teenager yet. And she would be with the gals and guys at school, her age mates. And she could tell. She could just look at a couple or look at a group or look at the individuals, and she could tell what they were going to do and what the results of that would be. So she found herself walking away because she didn't want to be part of that.
Mm.
So there actually can be some
positive
aspects.
What's
that positive?
Yeah.
I mean, please don't hear negatives here. It's all very, very positive in how you change and how you transform. Mm-hmm. What I'm trying to emphasize here is that it's not magic.
Right.
It's not like the media tells us. It's not like the movies portray.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a lot more to it than that.
Well, I tell you, if anyone wants to get any further information, they can certainly go to your website, which is linked at richarddugan.com. Go to the radio show's page, and PMH Atwater's website is linked at the top of the radio show's page as of the end of this broadcast. And you can go there and check out all of the... How many... I keep looking at your website. I keep thinking, you're multiplying your books up there. How many have you written so far?
I've written 9 books on my research findings, near-death research findings. I'm now working on my 10th and my final one. This will be my last hurrah on near-death.
Mm-hmm.
I've written several books on what is commonly called the new children.
Are you referring to indigo? as they've been described?
Well, some people use these labels, indigo, crystal, starseed, psychic, so forth.
You're just saying new.
If you take all of those labels and just toss them away, and you can, and you take the various characteristics the labels supposedly describe and bunch them all together, you have the profile of what I call the new children, or today's children. And so I'm writing a lot about that. I will write a sequel to the book, Beyond the Indigo Children, that was a bestseller. My goal is to write write the sequel to that book, because I really, really want people to better understand what's happening here with today's children. It's a lot different than what they're picking up from a lot of mediums or psychics or special shows or documentaries. I'm not putting any of that down. I'm just saying there's a lot more to it.
Well, we'll have you back when that book is out and about, and we'll talk more about that as well, because that is certainly a part of what is happening to us, or that we have chosen to allow to have happen in our lives as we continue moving forward. A lot of focus these days is obviously put on events that are ahead of us, specifically 2012, and a lot of folks are talking about that, as we are, but we're talking about it from a positive perspective and saying, okay, what is really happening? And we just see enormous opportunities and possibilities ahead of us, as well as right in front of us right now, to make a significant change in our world, and whatever that world, as you see it, encompasses. We can make a difference. I mean, just today, as my wife and I were out and we were looking for some materials to begin some projects that we're working on up on the hill where we live, we didn't go to the traditional hardware stores, the big box places. We went to a couple of places that do nothing but use recycled materials. And I got to tell you, some of the materials they're using look pretty doggone new to me, but they're a lot cheaper and they work just as well. And you're
well,
not,
in some cases, they're better.
Yeah. So we're making some choices and doing some different things. So through this program and what we're talking about, maybe you've had a near-death experience. We have a few minutes left if you'd like to give us a call. Our number here at Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, 805-564-1290, 805-564-1290. Or if you're listening live on the internet at richarddugan.com, once again, that big globe there, surrounded by New Paradigms for a New World, you can listen live every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, or call 866-564-1290. PMH Atwater is my guest, and we're talking about the after effects of near-death experiences. Seems like it's not something that I necessarily want to wish upon myself. By the same token, I would have to say that it sounds to me like some of these folks, once they have begun that reintegration process, and you've described some of the wonderful attributes that they now have that maybe either they didn't have before or they had it on a limited basis, it sort of has accelerated that process for them in terms
right.
of those
right.
those attributes that we all possess to one degree or another.
Well, what I jump right in and say to everybody that wants an experience like this, I say to them, please, 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 you can get the same after effects or similar after effects by going through the process of the inner journey, by going through spiritual and religious rituals and ceremonies and studies,
mm-hmm.
that there are many very, very sound and proven and good ways to get it. You don't have to go the way of violence or having these kind of experiences or really having to deal with dying or nearly dying and having those kinds of tremendous physical conditions that you have to deal with. You can go the way of prayer and meditation. I mean, mm-hmm. there's lots of different ways, if you intend to go that route, if you want to, if you're really dedicated and really work at it, there's lots of different ways that you can get it. You know, if we're looking at the physical after effects, those really affect the brain-mind assembly. They affect our nervous system, our digestive system, our skin sensitivity. Some people are changed more than others. Other people are really radically changed in those areas. Before and after photographs can even differ. Most people are better acquainted with the psychological after effects, like you lose your fear of death. You tend to become more generous, more spiritual, more tolerant, more open, and more at peace. You know, we're more acquainted with that. But
there are easier ways to get there than a near-death experience.
There are easier ways to get this than having to die to get it.
Excellent, yeah.
But I certainly want to jump right in here and also say that the field also covers related experiences, because we do recognize and investigate near-death-like experiences. These are with people who did not face death, did not nearly die, did not have that kind of encounter, yet did have a full-blown near-death experience, including all of the after effects, and those after effects become lifelong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we need to take a quick break here before we come to the end of our program. I want to encourage you to check out PMH Atwater's materials that she has available at her website through richarddugan.com. Go to the link, PMH Atwater, and it'll take you straight there. You can also listen to this program again if there's anything that was interesting to you, you'd like to share it with others. Certainly do so. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World.
Have you lost direction in life? Do you constantly worry or give to others but deny your own heart? Hi, I'm Candy Hoff, healing practitioner and angel intuitive counselor. I'll inspire and help you find your inner strength to regain clarity and balance in your life. Book your transformational session in downtown Santa Barbara by phoning 831-277-3716 or visit my website, angelhealinghouse.com.
Plans without execution are only dreams. At Monarch Wealth Strategies, we follow a disciplined approach to wealth management. It is our pleasure to be of service to you. Come experience the integrity, competency, and royal service provided by Monarch Wealth Strategies, a financial services firm founded by myself, Vanessa Patterson, and Aaron Clark. We are at 1501 State Street, a building shared with Community West Bank. Execute your plans today. Contact us at 564-0800, that's 564-0800, or monarchwealthstrategies.com.
Now you can lower cholesterol by taking a Centrum multivitamin. Introducing Centrum Cardio, the first and only leading complete multivitamin that can lower cholesterol. Centrum Cardio contains Corowise, a natural ingredient that can lower cholesterol. You may see results in as little as 4 weeks. The lower cholesterol you want from the name you trust. Centrum Cardio. Good for your cholesterol, good for the rest of you. 400 milligrams free phytosterol taken twice a day for a total daily intake of at least 800 milligrams as part of a diet low in saturated fat and cholesterol may reduce the risk of heart disease.
Take to that road, see how far it goes, and on that great ocean road, all the country's in our bones, all the trouble that you know empties out as you go. Oh, walk with me, talk with me.
New Paradigms for a New World. This is Tell Me Your Stories. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we're talking with PMH Atwater here about coming back to life, and we're examining the after effects of the near-death experience and understanding that after the near-death experience, you have these other wonderful attributes that were always a part of who you are, but they weren't really heightened, and of course, that experience does so. Well, there are easier ways, safer ways, if you will, and you know, as you were sharing those other ways, PMH, what flashed on me was my experiences in a sweat lodge. Now, for those who don't know what goes on within a sweat lodge, basically, I went in and they have these hot rocks and they're pouring water on them to generate steam. And it gets very, very warm in there. It could explain the reason why I moved to the Central Coast where it's cooler. But nonetheless, in my experience, I was not able to withstand the heat. It was too much for me, and I had to leave midway through the ceremony. And when I got out, I was very angry. I was frustrated with myself. I kind of like people with near-death experiences because I wanted to make it through. But as you described this, I began to realize that, you know what, that's just what it was. It was an experience, and I had the experience that I had, and I did all that I could do, and it was good, and I benefited from it. So,
these experiences shift our consciousness. They shift our understanding of reality. They shift the way we live, and they're very important. I hope people have more and more of these kinds of experiences. It really opens them up in wonderful ways.
It does indeed. And we encourage them to open themselves up to new possibilities, to try new things, to consider other options, other choices that maybe they hadn't before, which is why this program is here. We're sharing today your insights and your perspectives as a researcher into near-death experiences, having experienced near death yourself three times back in 1977.
Right.
And that obviously spurred you into the 9 books, and obviously a 10th and subsequent book will be coming out shortly. And we certainly hope to have you back on the program. And we want to thank you for being on the program today and sharing with us.
Well, thank you, Richard.
It's always a pleasure to have folks who have different viewpoints and perspectives on the program, because I think as we were always told as children by our parents when going to school, go to the library and broaden your horizons, read a book or something.
Right.
So,
yes,
we're trying
yes,
to broaden
yes.
the horizons, our own as well as others. So again, our thanks to you, and we ask you to stay on the line as we continue to wrap up this program. We encourage you to join us every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time for Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, bringing you choices and knowledge of those choices so that you can go out and make your dreams come true. And you can help others as well. Matter of fact, we have folks who are going to be coming on this program in the coming weeks, months, and we certainly hope years, who are going to be sharing with you their perspectives, their ideas, their points of view, their points on the circle as to what they see life is about and how they've experienced it and how they've made a difference. So we ask you to join us, be with us here on this program every Saturday, and also listen to the archives. They're available at richarddugan.com. Go to the radio show's page. They're all there from September the 7th, 2007 to the present. They're all there, and they will continue to be there as we continue to do these programs. Until next Saturday at this same time, this is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Love to all.
Little time.